Jackson. I'm going to repeat that. 37 and a quarter.
Hurry for the lead.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to an all-new episode of Dubs Talk presented by Wendy's. Get a $1.99 honey butter chicken biscuit today from Wendy's. I'm Grant Lithman, alongside Kendra Andrews, as always, and we are very honored to have Warriors insider Monty Poole join us as well, because we need to look forward for the Warriors' playoff push. Now, after coming off a road trip in which they went 3-2 after a very disappointing loss against the Wizards, and then also a pretty disappointing loss against the Celtics, the Warriors stand at 29-30, which means they have 13 games left in the season, which four are on the road. That means nine of them at home, where the Warriors play much, much better. So, guys, let's start with this. Let's figure out what the keys are for the rest of the way. And let's say, Monty, we'll start with you this time. Sorry, Kendra. I'm going to Monty. He's the guest. I gotta go again.
Totally.
What does Steph Curry need to do?
I keep doing what he was doing up until Wednesday night. Now, he doesn't have to play at that insane level all the time. But when Steph plays well, that means the first unit plays pretty well usually. And what we've discovered in the last couple of weeks is that the second unit is doing its part and maybe some even more. And what's happened in a number of games here is that the second unit has handed a lead to the first unit, which couldn't hold it. So I think if you're Steve Kerr, you're thinking, okay, we've got 13 games, we've got nine home games, we've got eight against teams with losing records. We should, by all accounts, at least win eight or nine of those games. If we win 10 or 11, that's even better. Now, if you're thinking about the final 13 games, you're telling yourself too that the second unit, leave them alone. Fix the first unit and the way they close games, and they're in great shape. So I think when I'm listening to Steve tonight, he didn't sound too concerned. They were 3-0, they could have, or 3-2, they could have been 5-0. But I think you're thinking, you know what? Okay. The first unit is going to be fine. As long as the second unit keeps doing what it's doing, we got a shot.
I agree. And I think if you're looking to pinpoint little things, it is the little things that they just need to clean up. You mentioned, Grant, the really gut-wrenching loss to the Wizards and the Celtics. Those were both arguably lost by blown layups. It's, you know, those little things. Draymond Green fouls out with just, you know, 2 minutes or so left against the Wizards. And then they give up a layup to the Wizards that if Draymond was in there, not saying it was a given that he would have stopped it, but they would have had more defensive presence. So just the little things, continue to decrease the fouling, decrease the turnovers. They've gotten better at it over these last 10 games. And now as you approach the final 13, it's just, keep on going, because they're trending in the right direction. And now, instead of huge mistakes that are just plaguing them all the time, it is little things that they do need to clean up, especially in close games.
Absolutely. That's it's the little things like that that a team that's not incredibly good can't give up, or else, you know, the margin of error is so low for them. And it's funny, you actually can look at the Boston game or the Wizards game and look at the difference of what happens when you have such a low margin of error. You had three bench players, or Bazemore was starting, play very, very well with Bazemore, Oubre, and Poole in the game against the Wizards, but their stars, Steph Curry, even Andrew Wiggins, struggled offensively. Then you look at other games where Steph Curry goes crazy, and then everyone goes, well, the rest of the team didn't step up to the plate, and that's why they lost. For this team to be good and make an actual playoff push where you go, hey, this team could be maybe a little dangerous if they get into at least the home team, 7 or 8 spot for the play-in tournament, at that point, you just got to say the whole team has to be playing well together. And the margin of error is just so low, you can't be missing layups. You can't be fouling too much. You have to make your own free throws when you get to the free throw line. And closing games is going to come down to execution like that. But as Monty, as you were saying, though, when we look at the bench unit, Kelly Oubre Do you foresee him staying on the bench the rest of the way of the season?
As long as he should, as long as the team is playing at a level they need to play to finish out the season on the right note. I think he gave them a boost of energy tonight. He was terrific the way he came in. He was on both ends. He was phenomenal. The second quarter was really where the Warriors should have won the game. And he was the catalyst there, he and Jordan. And then in the fourth quarter, you had Jordan come in and do some things and give him 11-point lead with 6 minutes to go. But yeah, I think Oubre at this stage now, especially with the way Bazemore and Steph are playing together, having Oubre off the bench is great. What they also need, though, I mean, they really missed Damian Lee tonight, and they also missed Juan Toscano-Anderson. And so we don't know when either will be back, but that could be an issue. You know, if you have all your guns ready, it's one thing. But tonight they were really short, and they almost pulled it out, but they didn't quite have enough. So I think Kelly's going to be a big part of what they need to do going down the stretch, coming off the bench, or even if he gets back into the starting lineup.
Kendra, you've been talking about the second unit a good amount recently. And, you know, it's funny when we talk about the second unit with the Warriors, it seems like some of the players that are in the starting lineup right now, Bazemore, sometimes even Looney, were part of that second unit before, right? And these guys are all playing well. It's just the inconsistency of the first unit now playing together, which kind of seems off.
Yeah, I mean, it's very backwards from what was happening at the beginning of the season, because it was like the exact opposite, where there was all these inconsistencies with who's in the second unit and they're not playing well while the starters are carrying it. And now there's inconsistencies of who's in the starting unit because of injuries and other things, and they're not playing well. Draymond Green even said after the game against the Wizards, the second unit's playing better than the first unit. That says a lot about where this team is at and what their priorities need to be, you know, heading into the homestand through those final 13 games. But at the same time, specifically focusing on the second unit, it is very encouraging, kind of tying in what Monty said about being short-staffed against the Wizards on Wednesday, is they were short-staffed against the Wizards and almost pulled it out. They were also short-staffed in a different way against the 76ers when you're going up against Joel Embiid and you only had two bigs in Draymond Green and Kevon Looney, and they managed to pull it out. So there are encouraging signs from this team saying, you know, when everyone's clicking, we can do things. We can be lethal. We can stop the people we need to stop. We can hit big shots. But, you know, yeah, it's going to be key to figure out how to get everyone on the same page, which is they've been struggling with all year. Like I said, it's just the complete inverse from where we were a few months ago.
You know, Grant, and both you and Kendra, tonight after the game against the Wizards, I detected a tone of encouragement from Steve, from Steph, from Draymond, in the sense that they feel good about most of what they're doing. And they feel that the things that they're not doing well are fixable. And they've also seen progress. And for me, one of the signs of progress, and, you know, the coaches would talk about it and they hate it. And you see it when you saw early this season, you saw so many defensive breakdowns where a defender would come off of a shooter to help on a non-shooter. I mean, that should never, ever, ever happen. Well, now it rarely happens. You don't see it for a while there. You were seeing it and going, what are they? Don't they coach these guys? But now you see it, you rarely see it. And that tells me that, okay, guys are getting the fact that maybe they're reading the scouting reports. Maybe they were getting to know the personnel, which, you know, tonight there was a moment where they left Bertans alone. You can't leave him alone ever. He's the one guy you can't ever leave alone. So it's these little things that differentiate a good team from a bad team, or a mediocre team from a team that could potentially make some noise in the postseason. So they're better at it. They're not where they want to be, but they're better at it, and they see the progress.
And I think the other sign of progress also is by saying, Monty, you said earlier in our conversation, they could have gone 5-0. They could have or should have gone 4-1. That might hurt more when the two losses that you suffered were winnable. But you have to acknowledge the fact that they put themselves in positions to win, which they haven't always been able to do. So as much as last second losses hurt, in my opinion, far more than blowout losses, it shows that there is growth. And again, it just goes back to those little things right at the end of games that really have just come back and bite them in the butt.
Yeah. And, you know, it's funny. I always talk about how it's a matter of perspective when you look at back on a road trip or a homestand and say they were this record. And a lot of it is just the order of events. If they had won, lost the first two and won the last three, you have a different vibe coming home. It's when you have, you know, it's the order of the sequence of events always kind of plays out in your overall perspective. But if you can take a step away and look of a macro level at it, you probably would have gone into the road trip being like, yeah, 3-2, we would accept that. We'd be fine with it. Hopefully, maybe we can get 4-1, but 3-2 would be good enough. Now, Monty, you mentioned the fact that maybe they, if they get into playoffs and playing well, maybe even make a little noise. So let's talk about what makes the rest of this season a success for the Warriors, right? Because it doesn't seem like anyone realistically goes, this is the team, they better win the championship this year. They better make it to the finals this year. That's not what people are saying. So let's talk about success. And one of it comes in the way of development. James Wiseman was supposed to be part of that, right? And he was supposed to be such a big key of that. Unbelievably disappointing, he can't be. However, what we saw against the Wizards, what we've seen against other teams, I mean, look at Jordan Poole. We're talking about a guy who's 21 years old. That was his 95th game he's ever played in his career. And all of a sudden he's blossoming and they were running set plays for him as if he was Steph Curry. There was one play where Draymond Green came off and set a screen and handed the ball, flipped it back to him, was trying to find him. And what does he do? He hits the shot. So the point is that there is development still in different key areas that they can still try to find success in and go, I feel very confident going future. How about Juan Toscano-Anderson? If he can get back on the court, things he's doing. It's just really encouraging to see. And this is one that maybe many people don't think about. Kevon Looney's playing career highs in minutes per game right now. Consistently, he's doing it over and over again. If he can go the rest of the way playing like this, this is a guy who has a player option for about $5 million next season. Chances are he'd probably pick that up, but the Warriors should be encouraged that the guy can stay healthy and play some heavy minutes. So those are kind of key things I'm looking at. But Kendra, when you're talking about success, let's say in the bigger picture for wins and losses and how far they should go, what is success to this team?
Well, I think Monty mentioned it a little bit earlier. When you look at the rest of the regular season, they should be able to pick up, you know, 9-10 games. And I think that would be successful. Winning the vast majority of these final games would be successful and really cementing themselves in the play-in situation instead of, because I do think that the way that things are stacked up in the West, there are even going to be kind of teams on the outskirts of the play-ins that could maybe make it in, maybe just end up falling out. So I think if the Warriors can actually cement themselves in a 7 or 8 seed, that would be considered successful. A lot has to go right for them. And I think a couple things would have to go wrong for teams for them to end up in that 6th seed and completely, you know, have to skip the play-in situation. So if that happened, that would be wildly successful. But looking a little bit more, you know, realistically, I think just trying to get to that 7th or 8th seed. And then I also believe that winning the play-in game would mark a highly successful season. You know, I think a lot has been put on just making it into the play-in games. And I think the Warriors have higher expectations for themselves, but also as they put together this run, they can beat some of the other teams that they would have to face in the play-in. Like we've heard the Mavericks being tossed around a lot as a name who's, you know, getting a little scared or a little nervous. If they made it into the actual playoffs, the season would be wildly successful. Because Grant, I think we've talked about this before, missed the playoffs once. Okay. Fluke season, lots of injuries, you know, COVID, all that stuff. Miss it twice, then you kind of have to start reevaluating some of the things going on. So if they could get past these play-in games, good. That's good.
I think the beginning of the season, their hope was to get into the playoffs and make a little bit of a run, get their guys some experience, the guys who haven't had that. Once Clay went down, obviously, I think the goal had to change. It had to come down a little bit. And to me, success would be, whether you're in a play-in game or not, success would be having a first-round playoff series and pushing a team to 7 games. Even if you don't win it, now if you win it, wow, you know. But I think if you can get to the play and get through the play-in point or avoid it entirely and get to the first round and play seven games. Get these guys like Jordan Poole and Juan Toscano-Anderson, unfortunately not Wiseman, but Wiggins, who has only been in one playoff series his whole career. I mean, get these guys the feel of the postseason and just let them know that here's where the bar is going to be set next year. It's going up. And so, if they get to the play-in game and they lose, to me, that's failure. You know, if it's a one game and they're done, they got to get to the next level, pass the play-in game, and then make a push. I think if you say, yeah, they lose a 4-3 series to whoever they might play, I think you think, you know what, given all the things they dealt with this year, that's pretty good.
Yeah, and you know, I know this is in a different way, and this is more financial than anything. The Warriors are going to look at it and say, I want more home games. I want fans are back in the stands. This is Chase Center's about to have fans. I mean, let's try to rack up some dollars. So that is something that they can look at and be like, that's success if we can earn back some money. Now, that also plays in a factor when just talking about the Warriors' success maybe here on out. Fans are going to be back in the stands as soon as Friday. So, you know, the Warriors are already a good home team. You add fans into it. We know how well Steph and Draymond, these guys, play in front of fans. You add them in. I mean, you just have to assume that home court advantage starts becoming a real thing again. And these guys are ready to be home. And I truly think you look at this schedule, there are many, many winnable games. And it's hard to say, well, they're going to win this many because, I mean, they just lost twice the Washington Wizards. So it's like you don't fully know. But if they can go, let's say, 9-4 the rest of the way, then all of a sudden you're looking at a 38-34 season. You're probably at that point maybe the 7 or 8 seed, and all of a sudden maybe you have a chance to even have fans in the stands for one of these play-in games, because, you know, we can dive in. We'll go over the logistics of the play-in games later on of how it all works when we're a little closer to that. So that is a key variable. Is having Chase Center.
Dish and Sling customers, don't miss a game this season on NBC Sports Bay Area and NBC Sports California. Don't miss your A's, your Giants, your Kings, your Sharks, your Warriors. To keep watching your favorite teams, go to howtowatchnbcsports.com.
Now, there also is one more storyline that obviously plays into what's considered a success in a different realm, and that's the individual performance, and that is Steph Curry. He's putting up numbers that are, in any other season, you'd say, I mean, this guy's an automatic MVP, but in a season in which the Warriors are just treading water and trying to make it in the playoffs, that holds it against him. Now, Kendra, you mentioned, can they get to the sixth seed? Things would have to fall in place, but one thing they would have to do is win a ton of games down the stretch, and things would have to happen. If they got to a sixth seed and Steph Curry leads them there and anything close to what he was just doing, then I do think he has a legitimate shot at the MVP. But otherwise, I don't think it's in the cards for him unless we see something like that.
I think it could either go that they get the sixth seed. I also think, like, kind of what Monty was saying, if they make a push in the playoffs, and I know that it is a regular season accolade and it's based on that, but if they did make a push and then win in a play-in game, I think that it could still, you know, possibly be part of the conversation. But yes, you know, of course it is the one argument against Steph Curry is the record. And yes, there have been times in the past that MVPs have been selected based on their individual stats alone, and they don't really pay attention to the standings. And that's, it could definitely happen. And Steph makes a really great case for an instance where it should happen. And at the same time, you also have to, you know, give guys like Nikola Jokic and Joel Embiid their individual statistical moments as well. But, you know, yeah, if the Warriors happen to make it to the sixth seed and avoid the play-in situation, I think that Steph Curry definitely has a chance to win it. Because, Grant, as you and I were talking about the other day, if there is one player who is literally the most important guy to their team and you take him out and they function far less well, it's Steph Curry.
I I think, well, first of all, the history is against Steph at this stage. I mean, Russ Westbrook won an MVP, and I think the Thunder that year were like a sixth seed or something like that. But they were still, I believe, 12 over 500. The Warriors have to go, well, 13-0 to get 12 over 500. It's a long shot. Only once in the last, well, the NBA and the ABA merged in the mid-70s. Only once since then has a player whose team was under 500 gotten the MVP. And since then, it's been 10 games or over 500 for MVPs. Only one. So for me, and here's where Jokic comes in. And I thought once Jamal Murray went down, oh boy, you know, the Nuggets could be in a little trouble. They haven't lost since he went down. And if the Nuggets keep winning, you can't take it away from Jokic, because that means that even without Jamal Murray, they're still going to be a 4 or 5, 3 seed or something. So, so what I'm saying is that there's two different things. Jokic had the lead a month ago, a week ago. Now, Steph is gaining ground. But at this stage, if the Nuggets keep winning, even if the Warriors get to 6 seed, it's going to be really hard to say Steph is the MVP, because I think me, I wasn't the only person who thought, oh, Murray goes down, the Nuggets could hit a bump. It hadn't happened yet. So let's see how it plays out.
It's very funny you say that, though, Monty Poole, because the Warriors play the Nuggets next, right, on Friday. Now, the key thing about that is I looked it up, and the games that Steph Curry has played against other MVP candidates, I'll put this, Nikola Jokic, Joel Embiid, Damian Lillard, Luka Doncic, against those four guys, the Warriors have played 8 games. All those guys were playing in those 8 games. Steph Curry is averaging 43 points per game in those games against those candidates. He's also 57 of 106 from three-point land for 54%, but they are 4-4 in those games. So we're talking about Jokic right now. Can Jokic lead this team to a high seed the rest of the way without Jamal Murray? Well, Steph Curry has a chance to play a hand in their demise, or what happens to that case, first off. Now, I see Kendra nodding or shaking her head right there. She's having her former Denver Nuggets reporter coming out in her right now, being stepping up for her boy Jokic. What are you thinking over there?
No, and it really has not much to do with Jokic in this situation. It has to do with the other guys. You know, we talk about, well, since Jamal Murray went down, Jokic has been able to step up. And this, and what I'm about to say is not taking anything away from what Jokic is doing. So just pin that up in the top of your brain. They also have, you know, a guy like Michael Porter Jr., who has, started to really come into his own this season, the last couple months. And then even when since I have left, they added guys like Aaron Gordon. They just signed Austin Rivers to a 10-day. This Nuggets team, you know, has a lot of things working for them. And then you add in an MVP candidate like Nikola Jokic. And you know, you kind of think back, and I'm not saying these two teams are the same, but you think back to when Steph won the MVP in 14-15 and the 15-16, he also had really great players playing alongside him. So that's not to say that an MVP can't also have good players. But if we're talking about standings and how the Warriors can play a card in, you know, the Nuggets standings and then Jokic's his MVP chances, it's going to come down to a lot more than just Jokic versus Steph Curry. And I think that the Nuggets have the upper hand, as well as the Warriors have been playing of late. Record-wise, I see the Nuggets coming out on top in this situation.
Oh, yeah, you think so on that one? Yeah, no.
Just a
little bit? Yeah. Everything you're saying is right. Yeah, I mean, the Nuggets are the better team. And part of it is because of Nikola Jokic, right? And that is that he has been unbelievable this season. And Monty, I don't know if you saw this tweet going around today, but Bobby Marks, ESPN, put out the numbers of what it would look like if Steph signed his extension with the Warriors. And we all knew what the numbers pretty much were, but just seeing it on paper is absolutely staggering. And that includes in the 2022-23 season, when the extension would start, he'd be making $48 million that season. That's the lowest. The next year it goes up to just under 52 million. The year after that, just under 56 million. And then at the age of 38 years old, Steph Curry would be making almost $60 million. Now, is there any way, shape, or form that anyone on the Warriors should balk at it and say, no, thank you?
No. No. There should be no negotiation. You give the man what he wants. I mean, I remember when, you know, when Kobe was playing and there was talk about, well, maybe he might leave the Lakers. You know what would have happened to the Lakers if Kobe had left? Do you know what fans would have done in LA if Kobe had left? Do you know what fans will do around here if Steph leaves? No. You pay the man and you move to the next guy, period. End of discussion. There is no discussion needed.
There would be riots, I think, in the streets if they didn't re-sign Steph Curry.
I mean,
ooh, save money. We let Steph go. We save money. No, not going to play. Right. Not
gonna also, play. By the way, you wouldn't be saving money because the amount of money he brings in for your franchise, the only reason you're worth what you are. We had Rick Welts on this pod. Rick, who, again, congratulations on an incredible career after this season. Rick goes, you know, I do remind Joe all the time, it's easier to buy a team and make it look really good when Steph Curry's already on it when you take it over. So, you know, that's part of it. They do recognize how lucrative it is to have Steph Curry on their team. So, yeah, I don't see a situation in which I just pay the guy. On the beginning of my Outsider show, I hand him cash because he says something nice about us. But, like, I will give him money out of my pocket if he needs it. I don't think he needs that money.
No. He's in a good place financially. But, yeah, there's no question about Steph needs to be a lifelong Warrior. That's the end of the discussion. I mean, there aren't many of those guys, but Dirk was that guy. Tim Duncan was that guy. Kobe was that guy. Steph wants to be that guy. The Warriors got to say, okay, period. Okay, done.
Grant, was it with you? I can't remember who I was talking to about this, but it might have been Grant. It might have been someone else. Someone said, if Steph was in like a pickle in Oakland or anywhere in the Bay Area and he sent out something like, I need help, I'm, you know, the entire city of Oakland plus some from Berkeley, plus some from San Francisco, bring San Leandro in. They're all showing up. He is an honorary Bay Area guy.
I'm showing up with Burlingame and San Mateo in my car and we're driving over there right now. The same would not be said for me if I sent that out. I think everyone's phone.
Nor should it be.
All of a sudden, everyone's phone doesn't work. And it's crazy how it works out like that. No, you guys are right. Like, Steph should be a Warrior for life. If we're talking about success for the rest of the season, let's extend it into the offseason. Part of success is signing Steph Curry to that extension so we can just stop talking about it and just enjoy how much money he's making and how much joy he's bringing to us. Do you know it was also a joyful experience? Having Monty Poole on this podcast. Thank you so much for joining us, Monty.
Thanks for inviting me, man.
I mean, it was Kendra's idea. I was like, I think it's fine with just us two, but Kendra's like, trust me, we'd rather have Monty on this.
I love doing the pod. If I had a little more of a heads up, I'd be even better. But yeah, I'm always willing to do it.
No heads up. We don't do heads up around here. No, come on, Monty. Before. You're too good on the spot. All right, everyone. Thanks for joining us. And rate, subscribe, do all those things. Leave comments. Say how good Monty is, how great Kendra is, and I exist. And have a wonderful day, afternoon, and evening, and night.
Fans back at Chase, baby.
Woo!
Jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.